Riff, why didn't you tell me there was a thing like Modulok except it's a robot?
I assumed you knew, I guess.
Dun dun dun. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's been so little time since we recorded the last episode of Video Games Hot Dog that none of us have done anything at all.
Is that true? Like nothing?
I played some Minecraft.
Well, that's a game. We're talking about other things.
Oh, right. This isn't the game.
Yeah, this is the interminable section before we start talking about games.
I did something that was a game but not a video game. Does that count?
Yes. Maybe. What is it?
I got a copy of this old... It's not a board game. It's like a board game. It's a Sherlock Holmes consulting detective mystery solving solitaire game kind of thing.
Like okay. A choose your own adventure kind of thing?
Sort of. It comes with...
Bag of pubes?
it comes with... you've got a book of cases.
So saliva samples.
So you read like a couple pages of Holmes telling you or of the guy coming and hiring Holmes to solve this mystery. And then you've got a map of London with locations numbered and okay.
Do you also have a map of France and then a map of a lady's underpants?
You have a book that is like the London directory that gives lists like people's names and various businesses. And so based on the case, so for example, you start out with the victim's name. So you can look him up in the directory and it gives you the number for his home address. And then you've got a book that is all the locations that are available in this case. So you decide where you want to go.
So that's like a choose your own adventure.
It's like a choose your own adventure, except you've got a much wider variety of places to go. And there's also like a book of local newspapers.
Could
like
you just
clippings.
Go to some of those locations at random, or would that be cheating?
Would they just not be relevant?
Most of them would not appear in the file for that particular case, although some of them do. Because there's newspapers, anybody mentioned in the newspaper file for that case, you could go randomly to them.
Huh.
But it would probably be a waste of a turn. At the end, there's like a quiz that asks you, you know, who killed this guy? Why did they kill this guy? Blah, blah, blah. And you're scored depending on your answers.
And then how many turns
you took factors into your score.
And then it tells you
how many turns Holmes took to solve it.
So it's technically replayable. You could try to do a better job of investigating it, going through fewer steps.
Even though you know who
did it.
Yeah,
you would know who did it, so it would be trivial.
I guess you would also know what all the quiz questions were.
Yeah, and it tells you what locations Holmes used to solve the case.
Oh, well, so it's not. So there are multiple cases.
There are multiple cases. The first, the introductory thing comes with like 10, and I think there's like 5 expansions.
Are they entirely separated, like the materials for them?
You got to keep them separated.
Thanks, Kevin.
I've ordered a couple of the expansions, but they haven't arrived yet, so I don't know what format they are. I think...
Is there anything consumable in there? Is there anything that you have to write down a thing on, or is it...
No. You're expected to provide your own paper and pencils.
Well. So actually solving the mystery is left as an exercise for the reader.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it was pretty fun. I played the first one and solved the case, but did it in far too many turns because I wasn't... I took a case just bumbling through it to sort of get a feel of how much information is going to be expected in the quiz and how much detail. So I'll probably do better next time now that I know the lay of the land.
Do you know the color of the killer's eyes?
No, but I did find out that he smoked Benson and Hedges cigarettes in a cigarette holder.
Okay. Is Benson and Hedges like an old English brand?
I guess so.
Huh.
Apparently, it was a particular tobacconist.
My boss at the theater that I worked at in high school was a lady who smoked Benson and Hedges.
Hmm.
They were really long. They were extra long. And if you bummed one from her, there was also a pair of scissors at the box office that you could use to cut half of the 9-inch filter off of it.
Whoa.
Wow. Yeah. It wasn't really a 9-inch filter.
Do you know what my favorite brand of cigarettes is?
What is your favorite brand of cigarettes, Kevin?
Kickstarter backer Asti Spumanti.
Oh. I thought you were going to say something like Benson and Hedge mazes.
No.
Benson and Hedges and Lynn, a.k.a. Sleeping Hair.
How about Benson and Hedges and Michael McNeil?
Huh.
That sounds like
that could be a real product.
Like Captain and Tennille and or something.
Captain Tennille and Michael McNeil.
Yeah.
Ooh. Do you think backer John Hansen feels bad that their name is so close to Jim Henson?
I'm guessing that it never occurred to him until just now. Huh. And now he's going to be sad looking into the mirror for the rest of his life.
Unless he's one of the Hansen wasn't on the list. Then he'd be reasonably wealthy.
So one of the Hansen brothers, the punk band, one of the Hansen brothers, the famous hockey players, or one of the Hansen brothers, the brothers who were in the band Hansen, who sang Mbop. Riff, answer the fucking question.
I don't have anything to say about that except that the theme for Futurama is every other note of Mbop.
Okay. Good.
Is that a thing, or are you making that up?
It's how it sounds to me. I have not rigorously tested this, but humming one and then the other, that's what it sounds like to me.
I think maybe you're missing something.
Hmm. Like
every other note. Yeah.
I had a sandwich for lunch today, and I put some sriracha in it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How was that?
It's pretty good.
You haven't had time to digest it fully yet.
So I have no idea what it's going to do.
Yeah. I watched a couple of movies.
Yeah, what were they?
I watched the the sort of dramatization of the invention of the vibrator, the movie called Hysteria.
Yeah, Jenny was talking about that.
Yeah, I think Jenny was unhappy about it. I went into it with no expectations, and it's kind of like a romantic comedy with sort of a backdrop of Victorian historical story or whatever. And then I watched John Carter, which was okay.
I heard that was surprisingly good.
Yeah, it was like I had heard a lot of bad things about it.
Yeah.
I think it was a crazy critical fail, or rather it was a crazy commercial failure.
Because people didn't know what the fuck it was.
I heard it was a very faithful adaptation of what is a very cheesy book.
I don't know how cheesy the book is.
Who wrote John Carter of Mars? It was somebody who was it
Edgar
Rice Burroughs?
Yeah. Who did the Tarzan stuff?
And call him Edgar? Do you think we know him as Edgar Rice Burroughs because he also assassinated someone or became a serial killer after his career as an author?
Yeah, that part's been lost to history, but the middle name has remained.
Okay, so that's how you can be sure is anybody you know by
a middle with a middle name. Yeah, if you've got a middle name, you're destined to either be a serial killer or assassinate somebody.
Unless your middle name is the same as your first name, in which case you're destined to be Boutros Ghali.
Right. So there was a pretty compelling... I watched the making of, and there was a pretty compelling argument that he was the one that basically spawned this whole genre of sort of sci-fi...
Flash Gordon-y kind of stuff.
Because
space opera.
Well, yeah, because Star Wars kind of comes almost directly out of this. It looks like, or it seems like that's the case. I mean, who knows? It's one of those things where there's a bunch of cultural influences.
That was basically what I heard, was that the reason that people had critical objections to it was because all these tropes seem really well worn when in fact these are the origin of these tropes. Yeah. Similar to how the dialogue in Casablanca seems really cliched because that's where these cliches came from.
Right. Well, sure, except that would be true if John Carter was a movie from 70 years ago and you were watching it now.
But it's,
because it's not, the book, the story, it is so making a movie now of a story that was important because of its particular context is like a dubious proposition in terms of no, you have to consider its context because
you have to consider its context a little bit in terms of the major plot arcs.
So to evaluate it critically, you have to do that. But as a guy who's eating some popcorn and yelling at the screen, don't go in there. Don't go in there, John Carter. There's Martian.
I heard it's. I heard the effects are really nice. I heard it's pretty.
It's like Avatar level.
They spent a fuckload of money on it, as I understand.
Is it on Netflix? Is that where you watched it?
It got the disc from Netflix.
Okay. I thought there was some big name that was associated with
that. There
were
a bunch of... Michael Chabon did the script for it, and who directed it?
Let's see if typing John Carter of Mars into the password field of my Gmail account
will solve any problems. It's also just John Carter. They didn't do of Mars.
Who's Michael Chabon?
He's written a bunch of books. He wrote Cavalier and Clay, I think.
Okay, that's
is that the guy you're thinking
yes.
of?
Yeah.
Speaking of scripts, I heard that the guy that that wrote Toy Story and
Toy Story 3.
Toy Story 3 least, yeah. And got the Oscar for Little Miss Sunshine. His treatment for the next Star Wars movie was accepted by Disney.
Hmm. Oh, that he's already done with it?
Well, he wrote them a 50-page draft, and they said, this is awesome, write the script.
Hmm. So then do you think he just had that?
That's possible.
Do you think that all aspiring...
It's possible. He was apparently a big Star Wars guy and used Star Wars as examples in writing workshop lectures that he did and stuff. So,
cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be fine.
You know, well, sure, it's going to be fine. I mean,
can't be worse. It's got nowhere to go but
up. I mean, the thing is, it's fine now, right? I mean, the prequels, I did not care for them very much, but I'm going to have to
come up with some crazy new ordering methodology.
You think?
Yeah. Well, because
you don't think they'll just start with episode 7?
No. I'm sorry. Like, so right now, there's a bunch of argument on the internet about what order you should watch the Star Wars.
Like if you're introducing your baby to Star Wars.
So it's like, I think it's... It's 4, maybe, it's like 4, 5, 2, 3, 6.
And just ignore one.
Yeah. Never watch one. There's nothing important there. And
because it's like avoiding spoilers,
it's
right?
That avoids the most spoilers, and it makes 2 and 3 seem like a flashback.
Okay.
Because it comes at a time when it makes sense that a flashback could happen.
That seems pretty reasonable.
So... Yeah, so that way if you are introducing someone to it the first time,
you watch 4, 5, 1, 2, 6, and then Red Letter Media Review 1, 2, and 3.
So are you assuming then that the events of 2 and 3 are just a hallucinatory dream that Han Solo experiences while he's frozen in carbonite?
It's possible. That's entirely possible.
That would explain why in The Empire Strikes Back, when Leia, dressed as the bounty hunter, wakes him up, he says, "What the fuck was that bullshit?" And it's like, whoa, watch your space language, bro.
Excuse my space French.
I was looking at a list of fake diseases today for work.
I've seen that list.
And space rabies was on there. It was pretty good. There were a bunch that I thought were great. I hope that we get to use them in some context.
I bet we do. I'll bet you having done the groundwork that you've already done on that will be enough of a starting point that we'll be like, well, it's mostly done.
I think we have some of that somewhere. I think there's a word bucket for diseases that I used in something.
Huh.
So.
Okay.
We're spoiling our trade secrets.
Yeah.
We use word buckets.
I mean, right in the middle of the table, we have a word hat.
Yeah.
And out of the word hat, I can pull things like Indie Kid, one of our awesome Kickstarter packs.
You know, speaking of hats, remember when Michael Bernstein, a.k.a. a naked Jew, took us to that awesome super Jewish deli where everybody had to wear a hat? And I said, why aren't the women wearing hats? And he said, they are, because somebody managed to convince everybody that a wig counts as a hat, because Jews, lol.
Did he actually say Jews lol?
No, but he would. If
he would, given
the opportunity.
Yeah.
Anyway, Michael is a longtime supporter of all of our audio endeavors. I'm sure he will be among the first people to hear this. And thanks for everything, Michael.
Yeah.
You're
a righteous dude.
Thanks for when we go hang out, remembering a bunch of stories about my life that I don't remember because I said them on a podcast 6 years ago.
It's like podcasting is like an instant forgetting machine, you know?
You think?
Like,
that's
it's like
just
that.
My life.
Well, that too. But I feel like there are tons of things that I will say on here and then people will respond to them in some other context. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
You know what I am literally going to forget immediately? The name of Kickstarter backer Anonymous.
Really? Mm.
Do you think your forgetting will accelerate from 0 to 9, like our Kickstarter backer 0 to 9?
Perhaps. Perhaps it will. Perhaps it will at that.
I think you guys have been beguiled by the Norse god of mischief, who's also one of our Kickstarter backers.
Coyote. What? Don't be a racist, Kevin.
Oh, dear. So John Carter. It was a pretty decent movie. Acting and script were not, like, amazing. Well, the script was okay.
Did you already hurl it back into the maelstrom? Or the maelstrom, as I call
it? It is locked in an envelope in the other room.
Locked. So glued.
Yeah, if you wanted to take it out and
I don't really because I'll never watch it.
Yeah, I wouldn't want
to
come back.
I would like, do less harm to the world by buying a copy of it and letting it sit on my desk than interfering. Well, because if I took it from you, it would just sit there eating up space on your Netflix queue for 9 months.
If you watched it and were within the next week and mailed it back, that would also be fine.
But it would also just not happen.
Okay, that's if it's not going to happen, then don't do it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but yeah, you don't even have DVDs on Netflix anymore, do you? So many of the things that I want to see are not on streaming. I would totally go streaming if they had everything I wanted.
I have resisted going totally streaming just for that reason, but I got to give it up. I'll convince myself, all right, I got to get better on this. I'll watch them and immediately put them in back in the mail, and that works for a week, and then I sit on the same disc for a year and a half again.
I mean, is it because you pick movies that you think are going to be edifying, and then you're never in the mood to watch them because you just want to jerk off to some anime?
That's part of it, certainly.
I mean, you do have like it's an also infinitely just tall not getting stack of around stuff to it to yeah. watch and do. Like yeah, that's the thing. Like yeah. I have so much media to consume and so little life to do.
Yeah, it. Right. I mean, I've got I think 5 more episodes of Foyle's War to watch, and then I've got an entire season of Adventure Time to watch, and then there's a tons of stuff that I could be seeing.
What makes you say you have so little life to watch it? Did you finally notice that sword I hung over your bed on a fraying thread? Oh, guess not.
From the bottom, it just looked like a big spider.
Yeah, isn't that a cool sword? It's like the last thing you're like, oh, a spider. And then when you get stabbed by a sword, you're almost like, oh, God, at least it wasn't a spider. anyway, you guys been playing any video games?
Yes. Yes, I have.
What have you been playing, Kevin?
I've been playing a fair number of games on my phone, sort of held over from traveling as much as we did. Played a game called Puzzle and Dragons. That's relatively new.
I downloaded that and haven't really... No, I looked at it and then went, oh, it's Bejeweled.
It's not, though. It is a match three game.
Well, yeah, I guess.
But, I mean, the formal structure is the match three, but you, instead of just swapping two tiles or two gems or whatever, you pick a gem and you get a certain amount of time to move that wherever the hell you want on the board, and it is in its wake, it is swapping the positions of things. So you can dramatically reorganize the board in one move, which lets you set up all kinds of crazy chain reactions.
It's sort of like a game that I sometimes play dragging icons around on my phone screen. Fuck.
On top of that,
that's the name of the game.
Man, I matched three of my favorite game apps. Yeah, and they vanished.
Yeah, but they vanished and became an even cooler game. It's like, yeah.
So on top of that game mechanic, which I think would have been plenty, they have like some sort of like leveling up system for all the like pets that you collect. You build
You have a team of Pokemans, basically. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, I may have to check this out.
And then there's like, so you like level them up and then you can evolve them into a higher form, which you have to level up again.
If you get extras, you can feed them to others to like level them up somehow. Yep. You earn some sort of pal points.
Yeah.
Just like going to Petco.
You get basically, you can get rare eggs that spawn into new dudes. It's just like a bewildering array of stuff. Plus there's like a limited amount of stamina that you have per day or whatever. It's got the time replenishment system, and it also replenishes every time you level up, and of course you can pay to replenish.
Of course.
So it's got the microtransaction thing going on.
How much do you get a reasonable amount of time per day for free?
You start off with like 20 stamina, and fights cost 3 or 5, but then there get to be like high-end fights that cost 50, which I haven't even been able to try because I don't have that much stamina. So, yeah, I don't know.
I don't think I've even gotten through the tutorial yet, and I'm already so overwhelmed by the number of numbers and the number of systems.
Yeah, also, the interface is kind of terrible.
You know something about that game that is of particular annoyance to me? You know how many hit points you start out with?
1,000,000?
1,018!
Awesome!
It's possible that you don't always start with that many.
Oh, that's cool. Even better.
Right, because did you pick a pal to go with you into that first fight?
I think you can't not.
Okay, so the thing is, everybody has a different number of hit points, and it's just a sum of all your pet's hit points. That's how many pet points you have.
Oh.
So, like, 1,008 or 18 or whatever was just the sum of all the...
Wait, do they die individually? Do they take damage independently?
Don't.
Or?
Unlike the monsters that you're fighting.
Huh.
It's just a sum of... Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I mean, it seems like there is a solid core fundamental gameplay.
Yep. Which has brought me back a couple days in a row. I've definitely like gone back to it and been like, oh, I'll play another 5 minutes of this.
But Jesus Christ, do I not want to have to look at a bunch of codexes all the time to figure out what the
Yeah. It's not.
Do you start to get some idea of what kinds of things you're going to be facing when you go into a particular dungeon, so that you then have to start choosing a team to take in with you?
Well, so there's a couple of different issues, right? So there are five different elements: fire, wood, water, light, and dark. And each of those corresponds to a gem type. And as you collect sets of those gems, you power up those things. So it behooves you probably to have
a spread of elements.
One of every type of element in your team. Your helper is going to double up with one of those at least.
Right. The helper, this pal thing, is you bring in a monster from somebody else's.
I think it's their leader monster.
So it's always one of those starting three, or can you change your leader?
You can change your leader monster
over time.
Yeah.
Okay.
And sometimes they'll be super strong compared to you. Like, you know, you'll get a level 30 helper.
Is that just like a die roll? I mean,
depends on. Well, the ones that are available are die rolls. Plus, you're supposed to make friends, and you get more pal points for using friends monsters. It's some dumb stuff. But you know that you're going to primarily be fighting like wood monsters in the like wood dungeon. And so, you know, you might want to go more heavily towards the fire elements in your team because they are vulnerable to fire. Right. But then if you have like three fire guys and you don't have any red gems on your thing, you're not gonna be able to do any damage.
Or if they pull a fast one on you and the boss of the wood dungeon is actually a big fire. Oh man, turns out the wood dungeon is burning down.
Right. Yeah. So like, you know. It's also weird because the monsters are very different. Some of them have a special ability that powers up that heals you. Some of them have a special ability that powers up that like
does AoE damage.
Yeah, AoE damage, lowers your opponent's defense, changes certain tiles in your set to something else, resets your whole tile board. There's a lot of depth there. I think it is probably worth playing, but I kind of wish I could go back and remake that game in sort of a sane way. I think it's a Japanese game that was ported to English. The daily rollover happens at midnight in Japan, so it might even be on Japanese servers.
Is there only one time zone in Japan?
I think so.
Man, that would be nice.
It's pretty narrow as far as islands go. So I've been playing that a bit. I checked out the 22 Cans Curiosity app, and boy, is that some bullshit.
It has gotten to the point where even when I'm like, oh, I want to waste a couple minutes just tapping cubes, I just can't because there's some cubes to tap, and I'll zoom in and like, oh no,
disappear.
Unless you tap a bunch of them and then it turns out they weren't really there. So it fucks up your combo.
Yeah. So the most precious resource in Curiosity as a game, the most precious resource to you is your multiplier, which is this incredibly fleeting thing. You get a multiplier by hitting like 12 cubes or hit 12 times to get up to like the 2x multiplier, and then you hit like 12 or 13 more things to get up to 3x and so on. And it takes longer and longer to get higher and higher multipliers. If you tap something that is not a little cubelet to destroy, it just vaporizes resets your multiplier back to 1.
If you tap, for instance, the post some bullshit about this on Facebook link that deletes, is always in the corner of the screen.
It deletes all of your currency.
Yeah.
That you have saved up, which could be hours or days worth of effort. And there's just a button up in the right-hand corner that is just like, doom.
Yeah, just fuck everything up. Fuck everything up because of this thing that I never, ever want to do, and neither the fuck does anybody else, you assholes.
Yeah.
My opinion on Curiosity is that if you have a couple of minutes to waste, you should play Super Hexagon.
You should do something other than play this game?
No.
I definitely wanted to participate in it as sort of a cultural event.
Yeah, I mean, I do pop in every now and then to see what the cube looks like, but yeah. I stopped playing.
It is an experiment. It is not a game. You know, I don't know what kind of data they're looking for or gathering or whatever, but yeah. Our friends over at Spotkin released, I think, their first game called Quick Shooter. That's an iOS game. It's got sort of an interesting mechanic. It's like a quick draw game where you like put your finger on one part of the screen and then they say draw and you like flick your finger up And then hit, like, so you're like flicking your finger up to like be the sort of symbolic of like raising a gun, and then you tap on the screen to be where you want to shoot. And you can also, you can shoot multiple locations around the screen if you hit various targets, like little extras or whatever. And it's interesting. I like, it didn't really like sort of draw me in, but it's pretty well polished and it seems like it could be fun. I think there's probably a way to play head to head, but I have not figured it. Quick shooter. Like those two words.
We played an early prototype of it at GDC.
Yeah.
When we were hanging out eating some sort of pretzel chip.
I was not very good at it then, and in my, you know, 30 minutes of play, I did not get much better.
That was where we met that guy that looked exactly like John Waters and talked like John Waters.
Yes.
That was crazy. Never met anybody that looked like John Waters. If you were the kind of guy that looked and sounded when you spoke like John Waters, I'm asking you, Kevin.
Oh, yeah, me.
Would you also grow a pencil-thin mustache on your upper... Because what?
Maybe.
I mean, it's cool, like...
Yeah, I could imagine going the whole hog. Like, you know, I've thought every now and then of... Like, I've got some, you know, John Lennon glasses. So I've thought, you know, maybe I should get some reconstructive surgery to look more like John Lennon.
Okay.
Right? Like, why not?
Sure. Grow your hair out a little bit.
Yeah.
Or cut it. I don't remember. Happen.
Wear a shirt that says New York on it.
Okay, yeah, you could. I made a ripped up version of that shirt for a zombie John Lennon Halloween costume one year.
That's nice.
I don't remember. Did I borrow your glasses?
You might have.
I don't think that you would have gone an entire night with it. Like, hey, can I take your glasses and go get drunk at some party?
Seems like a good idea.
Somewhere.
No. If his prescription is different than yours, that would be weird, too.
Well, that makes me seem more like a zombie, because I'm stumbling around and going, ah, that's what I do whenever I can't see. It's weird.
Yeah, so that's what I've been playing. Oh, no, and one more. I played a couple more. I played Flightless, which is a Nitrome game. They put a demo out, and it's on various portals, like Kongregate or whatever, and it is a game that was put out with the effort to get support for their green light on Steam. And I was like, huh, that's interesting, right? Like, this established publisher that has made a bunch of cool games wants to put a game on Steam, and so now they have to like garner public support by putting out a demo. So I'm curious about how that green light thing is going.
I've been seeing a little more rhetoric flying around about that, and
I'm still confused. Is all of Steam
all
going
new,
in?
All
is
new,
green,
all
everything
new,
has to go through
all
green
new
light?
Publishers have to go through Greenlight.
Okay,
if they don't already have an established relationship with a publisher or a developer. Sorry,
so
you
I
have
wish
to go through Greenlight.
I wish that I still had this on my screen so that I could read it. Somebody who, as far as I could tell, is like a guy from Steam, wrote a reply to the sort of like discussion about how obnoxious Greenlight is, which I'm not entirely sure where I land on my opinion about that. But his was basically like, this does not entirely replace the process by which we find new stuff to put on Steam. It is just like a tool for us sorting through stuff that gets submitted way faster than people can look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's like an avenue. It is not the avenue.
I imagine that they, people that they already have established relationships with, or people that they want their game property, they will still do whatever they want. But this is, if you are a developer and you have no relationship with Steam and they haven't approached you, this is how they want you to do it.
Okay. That sounds perfectly reasonable to me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious how much support it takes to get a game greenlit. I've seen some people saying that they are tired of games that are even in like alpha or beta state making it through the greenlight process, and they're like, you know, this was not at all clear. Why are greenlit games not being sort of like finished before they're actually put on sale, instead of like buying into an alpha that's kind of crappy?
That definitely sounds like a thing.
And it seems weird, right? Like, that seems like an odd choice.
Well, I mean, a lot of the objections that I was reading to it were that you shouldn't, like, the green light forces you to place unfinished versions of your game up there to get the ball rolling, and that there are a lot of games, like, for instance, this particular criticism was leveled about Amnesia, right? You wouldn't have wanted an unfinished version of Amnesia spoiling your shit.
Right.
Right. And I don't, that is not how I read that Greenlight works. I mean, my sort of, that is not how I interpreted it.
They definitely want you to put resources up there. And like, how are you going to get support for something if you're like, oh, it's going to be great, but I can't show you anything because it would ruin the surprise, right? Like, that's makes it hard to get support for certain types of games.
Is the idea that you're not going to make this game if it isn't going to be on Steam? I mean, why not wait and do this after your game is finished?
Yeah, because that's like, what I don't want is a world in which... It seems like the objections to Greenlight are this shouldn't be a hurdle that you have to jump through to be able to make indie games. And in my mind, the thing that makes an indie game is that you're not making it for a living, right? Huh. To begin with, right? That it's that like this is... Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how to articulate
it. I mean, I would definitely call some people who make games that I would call independent.
Yeah.
We make independent games for a living. But what I'm saying is, like, it is not as though the world owes you some sort of assurance that your effort is not going to be wasted, right? I mean, that's sort of like taking the risk to spend your time and your money on this thing is what you have to do in order to qualify for the potential reward, which is getting your thing out there and then maybe making enough money that you can make another thing, right? And it's like this saying, well, like, okay, so that putting the community in as a gatekeeper is hard. I mean, public opinion was already a gatekeeper as far as how your popular entertainment product is going to do sales-wise, right? And it's...
I mean, is Steam worried about having a catalog full of stuff that isn't good? Like,
I'm not sure. It seems like it, right? It seems like they have some standard of quality, right?
I would like to be able to trust that any game I see on there
has some
minimum quality level.
I mean, the one time I bought a game from Steam and then couldn't get it to run, I was pissed because, like, this is not, you know... I think that I would have been pissed if I hadn't known what I was getting into with Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, right? Because that shit is unplayable without the fan patches. And I think it is on there because it is so easy to find information about the fan patches, and it is a beautiful game, and they wanted people to be able to deal with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, going into that sight unseen... Does it say
anything in the Steam description like you're going to
win? Oh, by the way, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I definitely found some discussion about how to get it to run on there, but it took me a lot of convoluted work to get it to run stably. And I could never get that the final fan patch that had like the extra, like, restored some of the quests and stuff.
Mm. To work. I listened to the while I was on this road trip, I listened to the Watch Out for Fireballs about that game, and there is a ton of stuff that I didn't find. Like, just hearing their playthroughs and some of the optional stuff that they were talking about having done, I was just like, wow, I had no idea that was in there.
What kind of stuff did they do?
Just quest. There were quest lines and stuff. There was apparently like an abandoned hospital in one of the areas where they were filming a reality show about some ghost
resort. You never went in there at all?
Never found that.
Huh. It's just like another scary zone, sort of like the mansion.
Yeah, I just missed that. Apparently, there's just a section of the map that I didn't get around to.
It's right where you start in that zone, and it's sort of like a hole in a fence, and then you have to go in a building. Like it's pretty. I could see like missing that.
Yeah.
Like I thought that game was fantastic, and I'm super glad that we did it as an assignment.
Except for the fucking sewer level, like.
Well, so that was long and weird.
This is where we ran out of not bullshit. What about you, Riff?
I did pretty much nothing yesterday except play Minecraft all day. Somebody released this mod pack called Feed the Beast, which is a combination of 38 mods. So, and some of them are gigantic mods. It's like industrial craft and build craft. Things like if you're running it comes with like a front end basically to make the installation of all these mods pretty much automatic, which is cool because I have not yet been able to successfully install a mod manually. And then it gives you the list of mods, and you can turn some of them off if you want. If you're playing with all of them, you're getting like a dozen new ores in the world and just tons and tons of stuff.
Do you have more storage space? Because that, like,
you can build more storage space. There's a mod that makes like chests that have more spaces in them.
No,
there's
like
a mod
inventory,
that's like,
though.
There's a mod that gives like a backpack that gives you more inventory
with
space.
With a dozen more ore. Yeah. Types. Like,
and
I would
some
just be
of
super
it is,
frustrated
it,
filling
some
my
of the stuff in there
the
is crazy. I found like bauxite. I found some bauxite ore and I was like, what is this for?
Aluminum.
And fortunately, it has a thing. You can get a menu, like a list of all the items in the game. And you can mouse over one and hit U to see all the recipes that thing is in. Or you can just click on it to see how to make that, if it's a thing that you can make with a recipe. So I looked up bauxite and I said, all right, what is this for? What it's for is you take your cube of bauxite ore, run it through a macerator to get bauxite dust, which you then run through an industrial centrifuge to get aluminum dust and titanium dust and compressed air and a tank of hydrogen.
So they're trying to be like hyper realistic about like
some of them are, yeah,
transitioning between ores and metals.
Yeah,
and stuff?
So some of the mods are hyper realistic, some of them are hyper unrealistic. There's a mod that
And these are all in the same pack.
Yeah, and they're all in the same pack. There's this gigantic like alchemy system based on genetic manipulation of bees. There's
wow.
So after I built like a geothermal generator to run my macerator and compressor and rubber extractor, I started playing with a mod that was the main reason that I got this pack, because I tried to install this mod previously and couldn't get it to run on its own, called Mistcraft, which is an implementation of the ages and linking books from the Myst games in Minecraft.
Wow.
And it's pretty cool. Basically, you make a book into a descriptive book, and you can either link into that book like randomly without writing anything in it, in which case you get a randomly generated universe. And then you hopefully took a linking book with you, because otherwise you have no way to get back.
Jeez.
Just like in the Myst games.
Well, could you make a book that linked back to the parent universe out of materials that you gathered inside the
possibly
pocket universe?
if all the necessary materials are available.
Oh, do they have different world generation rules for when you go in there?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Man.
And so you need to make books, you need like leather and paper. So if you can't find any cows in this world,
wow.
So but after you go back to the overworld, you can take this descriptive book and put it on your writing desk, and it will show you all the symbols, the writing symbols that make up this world, and you learn those symbols, you put them in your notebook, and then you can use those to manually write a descriptive book to your specifications.
Wow.
And if you introduce contradictions by using too many of certain symbols, or if you don't put in enough symbols, it'll throw some in at random to fill in the gaps, so you can end up with unstable ages with like decay blocks that disintegrate automatically so that the world just dissolves before your eyes.
Wow.
Or all kinds of like weird effects, like the air can be poisonous or the air can set you on fire.
Jesus.
I went into a random age that was I appeared in the middle of a forest. The cloud layer had been set to ground level, and the clouds were blue, and it was perpetually nighttime, and the air made me weak and set me on fire. So I had to I kind of got out of there pretty quick.
So do you always have time to escape? This sounds fucking
generally
great.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Kind of,
what's the name of this mod?
Mistcraft.
Mistcraft.
Yeah, with a Y.
And you used the
The mega pack is called Feed the Beast.
Feed the Beast. Wow.
I think I would like to play just Mistcraft.
Yeah, you can selectively turn the individual mods on and off in the Feed the Beast launcher.
That's great. Yeah,
my plan is when I get a chance to go back to it is go through. The big problem with Feed the Beast is that although you have this encyclopedia of recipes, there's nothing in there that tells you what these objects do and like what this machine is for. And there's no central wiki. Like all these mods are authored by individual people, and for the most part, they all have their own wikis, but there's nothing that tells you this device is from the Industrial Craft mod or this device is from the Build Craft mod. So it becomes really hard to find out what these things do because you don't know where to look.
I mean, Google and the names of the things.
That's about the best you can do.
I mean, that's probably enough if you get really curious.
Yeah. So my plan is to.
It's just annoying.
Is to look up all the names of the mods and see where all this stuff is from and turn off some of the stuff like the bees and things that are adding unnecessary complexity that I don't want. There's also a lot of redundancy. There's like a lot of different ways to build an ore pulverizer because these mods have a lot of them have their own overlapping versions.
Right.
So my take on the scene with Minecraft mods is that if they are not really actively maintained, updates to Minecraft leave them behind and leave them inoperative.
A lot of time, yeah. I guess it depends on how they're implemented, I guess. Also, there's a problem where mods have to be kind of tightly coordinated because if a mod introduces new blocks, those have to have specific block IDs. And if you've got an ID crash between two different mods, it can cause problems.
So and you could turn on all of these mods in that giant pack.
That's the great thing about this pack is that it's set up so that they all work properly together.
Wow. It's an interesting sort of, you know, fracturing of the Minecraft community. Like, I play with, you know, these three mods. Oh, yeah, well, I play with these three mods, one of which overlaps,
I mean, the Minecraft community is kind of inherently fractured anyway, right?
Because it's all private servers.
Yeah.
They're apparently working on, like, Mojang is working on real modding APIs.
They've been saying that for years.
Yeah,
though.
Apparently it's a difficult process.
Sure, but I mean, that was supposed to be one of the launch features for not being in beta anymore, right? But or going from alpha to beta or whatever.
I've been every now and then I look back at the like iOS Minecraft version. It seems like it's getting closer and closer to the actual game and not just the creative mode.
They keep adding stuff week to week.
My experience with Minecraft for the last like 6 or 9 months has just been occasionally reading the patch notes and the wiki and like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I get back into it once a year for 2 weeks.
Really, really intensively for a couple of weeks. Yeah. And then
it's such a great system and game that I would spend a lot of time in it if I didn't have other stuff going on. I feel like, you know, our friend Nightmare Dave, because his work schedule is so sporadic, like when he has 3 weeks off at a time, he'll just build crazy cool stuff and then work for 6 weeks and then come back and keep building stuff in Minecraft.
I think he's one of those guys, You remember Tom, the policeman from the bar? So, like, I know this comes up in other podcasts that I've listened to every once in a while, but I think there's this category of person who plays like one game a year.
They just play the fuck out of it.
Yeah, and it seems like that is. Although I have seen Nightmare play other computer games, he does not do what we do, right? He doesn't constantly buy games. He doesn't have like a backlog. He just has been playing Minecraft. For a while, all he did was play Dungeons & Dragons Online, right? And now all he does is play Minecraft, and it's just like...
He really found the secret to Minecraft, though, which is coming up with projects. Like I don't play a lot of Minecraft because I can't think of anything I really want to build, but he's always coming up with really interesting, elaborate things to make.
I just give up. I get sort of bored with the process of actually constructing the big things that I want to construct. And so I don't, you know, it's like I get to the point where I'm like, all right, well, now I want to just build a bunch of like half-timbered buildings to fill out the like sort of village area inside my battlements here. And then they made some change that made it super difficult for me to farm sheep. Yeah. And so I'm like, well, I don't want to just spend hours going around shearing sheep, right? And I don't want to do, you know, what the way that Dave solves that problem is by having this fenced in area with like a billion sheep in it somehow, because he knows the way that they changed those rules and he lured some sheep onto this island. And
did you ever see my crazy sheep farm on the top of my
I think arcology? I did, yeah, and they kept, didn't they keep flying through
geometry? You've not seen it. You didn't see it when I finally figured out how to make them stay.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I had a bunch
they
of different
have
pins.
Since solved that problem.
I have that good.
Yeah.
I had different pins for every color of wool, every color of sheep, and so you could go and gather whatever color you wanted.
Mm. I only
and
ever
it was
wanted
really
light.
Loud when you were in there because there were a lot of sheep. There were like 200 sheep buying.
So I feel like you guys, a lot of the ways in which you finance these giant construction projects is by building a machine to just auto-kill skeletons for you to get bone dust, and building a machine to auto-kill spiders to make wool out of silk. And I just don't, to me, that sort of violates the spirit of it. But I don't.
That's weird. That's weird because it's all part of the universe.
It is built in there, but I mean, I don't. Yeah, I guess.
And do you not want a machine for pigs? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't want a machine for zombies. I don't. I guess there's nothing you get out of zombies, except occasional swords or iron ore. Yeah. I guess iron ore is now renewable because of zombies.
Yeah, they rarely drop ingots. They drop carrots and potatoes now too.
Huh.
Zombies, it seems like when they add a new item but don't really have anywhere good for it to naturally be spawned, they have zombies drop it until such a time as they figure it out.
Feathers for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I want the sort, like, I could build these things in creative mode if all that was important to me was building them, but it's not. It means something to me that I actually went and got all the stuff. Mm-hmm. What it means is that I'm never going to finish any of these big projects. But I don't know why the idea of like building a mob spawner and crusher is like, there's a lot of just so many of them rely on like, oh, well, you do this bullshit where you make a shaft that has a square of water and then a ladder and then a square of water and then a ladder. So it does some bullshit that you can't really build this. You know, you could not make a model
in the world
of this.
In the real world.
Hmm. Right.
That's fair. I mean, that's similar to my refusal to make walls out of wool, because wool is not a valid structural material for a wall.
Oh.
Think of it as like a carpet. Or a pile of
wool. I do use
it
for carpet.
Wool.
Well, so then, I mean, would you not make floor tiles out of workbenches? Because, I mean, they're cool. They look really cool. You can make some cool tiled floors out of them.
I typically do not. Yeah.
You're like, because I don't, you don't, like, your current house doesn't have, like, saws and hammers and shit buried between all of the floor tiles. Yeah, just, man. What I really want is to be able to, and I could probably do this, right? I could probably figure out a way to start messing with this. I want to start screwing around with procedural generation of 3D worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And there is probably a way to do that, but I'm just sort of waiting for there to be some framework where it's like, all right, here is a set of, like, say, JavaScript functions. And here is, you know, this is a way to...
Can you not do it in Unity?
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like a package that Unity might have.
I mean, it probably does, but Minecraft just already has, like, I can just do stuff like put a tree here, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, like, finding a model of a tree and figuring out how to put it into the... Like, you know, I mess with Unity a little bit. There are some things that are very easy. I mean, I very quickly made a thing where it's like, all right, well, now I've made this big area that I can then run around in with WASD and mouse, because all this shit is just, like, all these built-in features of it. Oh, man, speaking of which, did you guys play Dear Esteban?
Yeah. No, not yet.
Oh, man, it's pretty good. It was from that Fuck This jam. And it's not actually like a hateful parody of Dear Esther. It was just sort of a funny parody of Dear Esther. But, man, it's
did
pretty...
Did you see the giant motorcycles?
It's pretty good. I did, yeah. Okay. I didn't see that until my second playthrough.
Okay.
I was moving too fast for a lot of it, and it would play.
Sure.
But then I thought, yeah, that's probably okay. They probably would not mind if a lot of these audio cues were playing simultaneously. What I was really hoping for was when I heard that it was just text-to-speech,
I was hoping that that was built into the engine so that the text could actually be generated, because what I want is for us to be able to write word buckets to do random generation of the narration for that style of game.
Wow.
Oh man, it would be so meaningful. dude, art and games, man.
I mean, you'd probably have, you know, some non-zero percentage of people that would play through a generated game that like just happened to say things that really connected with them.
I mean, and they would really appreciate as it. Your narrator. That's totally that's pretty interesting, actually.
Anyway, yeah, Dear Esteban has text to speech, but it's the same every time. So I think that's probably just WAV files of Dr. Sabezo reading them. It's a little better than Dr. Sabezo. It's like the OK Computer guy. What's that? Fitter Happier? The Fitter Happier voice from the Macintosh computer system.
Oh, was that not just Stephen Hawking?
That was actually Roger Ebert. Oh. I kind of want a copy of Roger Ebert's voice software thing.
Huh.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's copied. I wonder if his like utterances are copyrightable.
One word at a time?
Yeah.
No, it's fair use, and then fair use, and then fair use, and then fair use, and then fair use. And for like a 7-word sentence.
What else have you been playing?
What did I play? I played a little more Sticker Star, and I want to play enough of it that I understand it, like the overall structure of it. But as it stands right now, I do not understand why you want to fight any monsters when you're going through the levels.
It does seem like monsters that can be avoided are worth avoiding. It takes consumables to fight them.
All it does is give you some coins.
Yeah, and I've got like 3,000 coins.
And nothing to spend it on?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
you can spend it on like basic
You can spend
stickers.
It on some basic stickers. You can spend it to...
Can you make a profit?
If you don't feel like... Like if you use your scissors sticker, you get to... If you want another one, you get to choose between going back to the level where the scissors spawn and picking them up, or going to the shop and buying a pair of scissors.
It just seems like fighting a monster can only ever make you weaker, which is just kind of a violation of the RPG.
If there's a shop that sells 5 stickers, can you only use those 5 stickers to kill a monster? And will you have...
You
can
won't
you buy
get
them
enough
again?
Gold back
well,
to
that's,
buy...
So if you can't, if
it
you can't,
doesn't seem... I mean, because it seems like, you know, unless you start getting a shitload more gold for killing monsters...
If you really just want to farm gold... You can easily go to the town and the docks and pick up all the shitty stickers that lie around spawning naturally
them.
And go and sell them. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So they do the stickers in the environment respawn even in the sort of common areas?
Yeah.
What's the time frame on the respawns?
Entirely leaving the levels back to the world map and then returning.
Okay.
God, that seems like real bullshit. Like if that's
it's a weird choice.
I mean, I've never felt obliged to do that.
That's what I keep hearing. You know, that you don't, like, it seems weird that you can run out of your basic combat abilities, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I see
potion paralysis. Though,
I see,
right?
Like, but it's not even that. It's like, why would I fight this guy out in the world?
Do you get nothing from it?
You get like a couple coins.
Yeah,
nope. No stats. No leveling up. No experience. The only thing that you get out of fights is slightly less well equipped for your next fight, which is total violation of
it's
the
fighting,
structure.
I have started only. I only fight guys if I feel like they're going to get in the way. Like, if you run up and attack a guy, then you get that first hit bonus. Whereas...
But it's not enough to kill them, and you also don't know how many enemies there are going to be once the combat starts, so you don't know how many stickers it's going to cost.
But if the alternative is between initiating that fight yourself or having that guy run up and attack you while you're trying to do a difficult jump.
Oh, like if the monster manages to surprise me, like Kickstarter backer, surprise me.
Exactly. So, yeah, so I fight guys if they seem like they're not avoidable or are going to be a pain in the ass while I'm trying to do stuff, but otherwise I just run around them.
Hmm. That's weird. I mean, I want to play more of it so that I will know if it continues to be like that. You know, I'm like five levels in or something. Yeah. It's
plus, I mean, there's a lot of really charming details in it, like the way the world map, when you open a new path on the world map, it rips up as one of those rip strips on like a FedEx envelope. And it's I don't know, it's really charming, and there's a lot of neat things in the way that like the areas are constructed all out of cardboard, so there's like hidden doors that open amusingly, and you can see like the grain of the cardboard on the edge of the thing, and I don't know, it's got a lot of really nice little details, and so it's fun. But yeah, the overall combat system with no experience points or anything is a little weird.
Did you see that video for the, gosh, I don't remember the name of the game. I think it was a Vita game where one of the game mechanics was you'd touch the touchpad on the back of the Vita, and it would like your fingers would pop through the world, and you could like sort of move them around and like interfere with stuff that was going on. It was all sort of like another sort of paper sort of
I don't remember the name of that either. Nothing yet has made me consider buying a Vita.
Nah, me neither.
I mean, a Vita, a DVD of that movie starring Madonna.
you don't like shoes.
What I would buy, however, is a DVD of that movie starring Madonna, There's No Crying in Baseball.
There have been a couple of games that looked interesting on the Vita, but nothing has jumped out at me. I mean, I don't even have a 3DS at this point yet either, so.
Jesus Christ. I brought my 3DS to the office because I thought, I'll play Sticker Star on my breaks, and I played some Picker Star.
Picker Star?
Yeah. And then the next day, I went to play some more, and the fucking battery was dead. Like, huh, okay. So I took it home, put it on the charger overnight, brought it in this morning, and then when I went to play it, the battery was dead. So I don't know if I plugged it into a charger that wasn't plugged in.
So are you putting it between the pages of a book when you like are done with it? Because I've heard that as long as the 3D is enabled, it drains a lot of batteries. So I think you need to make it as flat as possible when you're not using it.
Right, so that the sprites don't get out into the the sprites don't get out into your desk and generate a bunch of waste heat.
Yep.
No.
Okay. No. Well, then I have nothing to help.
Yeah, I don't, man. Like, other people seem to have not had what I would describe as just a miserable ass experience with the battery on that thing. The only times that I have ever been able to consistently play it when I wanted to and for any amount of time is with it plugged in.
Yeah, my solution is just, if I'm not playing it, it's plugged in.
Huh.
I felt like that was kind of how I did it with the DS.
See, whereas I feel like I just never had to charge my DS. I feel like I played it all the time, and I don't remember ever charging it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for you, another solution would be, since you're not interested in the Airstream sharing, or you know,
just turn off Street all the wireless.
Pass tagging. You'd be like, when can I borrow your Airstream trailer to go? I want to set up a burrito shop in the parking lot of this Phish concert.
Well, I was going to suggest
turning off the Wi-Fi.
Well, I was that, or just turn off the system entirely instead of just putting it to sleep.
Oh, but I mean, I just when I want to stop playing, I want to just close it and put it down and have it not use all of the juice.
The juice.
Anyway, I also played the third episode of The Walking Dead because I'm trying to get semi caught up.
Did the fifth one come out?
It comes out tomorrow.
Okay. Cool. Then I get to play them all at once.
You're not going to be able to.
No, I know. I can start playing.
Too them. Emotionally taxing.
It's so fucking harrowing.
Yeah.
Wow.
I went over the course of like in the middle of episode 3, like I went from super pissed off at the developers for how scared I had been for a moment in this one sequence to just like fighting back tears in the next scene. It this is like the most successfully emotionally manipulative game I've ever played.
Awesome.
And it keeps not
sounds,
like
it sounds awesome.
It has not lost any steam yet. It is horrible. The experience of playing it is horrible. It's like being in a Lars von Trier movie and you're a woman. Like, It's so fucking good. I take back what I said when I took back what I said about this game not being really important, because it's like getting some distance from it allows me to forget how effective it is. And Jesus Christ, and knowing how little time they have been allowed to actually make this. I mean, there's a lot of people working on it. I think that Telltale has thrown a lot more resources at it. I can't say this for certain, but it seems to me like the credits keep getting longer with every successive episode. But still, like them just suddenly deciding like, okay, we need to get this thing done on the schedule, on the incredibly ambitious schedule that we've been, which is probably good, right? Because I would not want to be in the position of following up something that is so good, you know? So just having like just this push to get it all done. Although I think their lives are probably ruined. everybody needs like a 5-year vacation after this.
I mean, they're certainly all going to do a season 2. I wonder if Jake and Sean.
I would hate for this to be the thing that suddenly makes that like the traditional burnout cycle video game job for them.
What do you mean by burnout cycle?
Well, just people don't last very long in the industry, right? I mean, they just don't, like, statistically. The crunches and the pressure, like, for big studios. And that's different in indie shops,
right?
You know, which at what point is Telltale no longer independent?
I mean, do you think that they're an indie shop?
I don't know. I don't know if they are or not. They're small, but it's like they're, you know, a bunch of LucasArts veterans founding it, you know, is I would definitely characterize like, Double Fine. You know, Double Fine operates like an indie shop.
But they've got like publishers and stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
you know, maybe I wonder if indie developers are allowed to have publisher deals. Right, or because at that point you're no longer really independent. You're working at the behest of a
well. So does Steam count as a publisher? I mean, I guess is anybody who's working with Microsoft anybody who has a game on XBLA is not indie? Are there no indie games on XBLA because they all have Microsoft as a publisher?
Are they the publisher or are they just the distributor? Isn't a publisher somebody who like handles your advertising for you? Right, like that's the thing. I don't understand the role that a publisher plays in making video games. That's like that is just a gap in my understanding.
Yeah,
because it sure as hell doesn't seem like
it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Like in a way, it makes me feel good that when we go and we talk to people who make like real video games, that we just have no idea what the fuck they're talking about. Like, what does cert mean?
Yeah.
And everybody's like, "Whoa, seriously?" Like, oh, cert is like the worst thing. It's this is when all of your dreams get shattered by some asshole in a tie, like.
So no wonder that guy started crying when I took out that roll of certs.
Yeah, it's weird.
He's allergic to Retsin.
Man, I would probably cry if you took out a roll of certs, because that the only person I ever knew who used certs was my dead grandmother.
Aw.
I know.
I stole them from her.
I was wondering why her grave looked disturbed when I went by it back home. He just, what, they quit making it. I need my fix. Kevin is the opposite of allergic to Retsin.
Yeah.
He's been chasing that Retsin dragon for the last...
There were a couple of products where if I had known that they were going to be discontinued, I would have purchased up.
Yeah. Cinnamon Tom's Domain toothpaste.
Cinnamon, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Carnation, that's the one I'm breakfast thinking of. Bars.
Really?
Yeah, those are so good.
Huh.
I used to go through a lot of Carnation instant breakfasts when I was in high school.
Could you not just like do a Dippin' Dots thing? Not Dippin' Dots.
Couldn't you just fashion a Carnation breakfast bar out of Dippin' Dots?
Well, no, not Dippin' Dots. What's the thing with the stick and the sugar? Do you know what I'm talking about? The like
Lick-a-Made?
Lick-a-Made.
Lick-em sticks.
Yeah, Lick-em sticks. So you just take like a regular granola bar and you take a Carnation instant breakfast packet and you just like wet it and then stick it in there.
It was. I've looked for granola bars that were similar, but none of them. None of them are quite the same.
So couldn't you just...
That ultra-compressed peanut butter dust, I don't know what it was that those were made out of.
Couldn't you just take a bar of soap and dip it in a bag of ants?
I could, but that would not be related to what we're actually talking about.
I mean, about as close as what Kevin just suggested was the point that I was trying to make.
Carnation instant breakfast, it's a powder, right? So you can coat it on top of another granola bar, and it's like the same thing. It's not at all. It has nothing to do with ants.
Have you ever life actually experienced a carnation breakfast
bar? No, I have no idea what it is.
Okay.
If you miss Ecto Cooler, just hold your nose and drink some motor oil. all right, Kevin, for Christmas, I'm going to make you some Tom's of Maine cinnamon toothpaste.
No. No. I do not trust you.
I hope you like bison blood.
M. Bison?
Yeah.
Man. I wonder, I should also find a place that still has Hostess fruit pies and stock up on those.
They're going to be fine. Somebody else will pick them up.
Yeah, I don't think there's any danger of that. Because, I mean,
nobody else got the recipe.
When they say they're going to liquidate their... Also, that suddenly came back, right? Like, they were not allowed to go bankrupt.
Oh, really?
The judge made them go into mediation with the unions that were the cause of them deciding that they needed to go out of business. It seems sketchy. It seemed like Hostess said, hey, so our bakers went on strike because they wouldn't let us lower their wages. So we want to go out of business and also give a bunch of bonuses to corporate dudes. And then the judge is like, no. They have been forced into mediation, which they apparently hadn't even tried.
Huh.
Good.
Lame.
Yeah. You know, this is why you should buy your fruit pies from your local baker.
Who's your mama?
Who, if he mistreated his employees, they would just quit and go to work for the different local baker that treated them better. Yep. Can't let things get too big.
Yeah, maybe we should cut all the corporations off at the knees.
City states. Tiny city states. More like city houses. House states.
Burbclaves, I think, was the name.
House states. So we establish the independent nation of Asymmetristan, where our principal export is a video game, and our import is
Amazon.
Beer from... our import is Amazon. Wait a minute. Fuck. This is actually going to suck.
I guess it would be books from the Amazonia tribe or whatever.
Well, no. I mean, there have to be books from like our neighbors. Our neighbors would establish a city state where their principal export was apparently piles of fucking garbage on the front lawn. There is literally an eight foot high pile of just garbage in the neighbor's lawn. Like
it's as if they had ripped everything out of their
house.
There
was a sign that said yard sale, but I don't know. It was like, okay, well, so we got this dog.
Somebody bought the yard.
We got this dog, and the dog went crazy and carried all of our shit out onto the lawn and tore it up and put it into piles. Let's just put up a sign that says yard sale so that we don't go to jail. I don't understand. Nothing has prices. It is unattended, and everything that is for sale is garbage. This is literally the worst yard sale. Anyway. What's in the news, Kevin?
Wii U has started to hit stores, and people are playing with it and getting excited or upset if they try to shut down their Wii U while the firmware is upgrading or updating. It can just brick the whole system.
Nice.
Yeah, so don't do that. What else? In Kickstarter news, Star Citizen finished its fundraising effort.
Speaking of Kickstarter news, thanks, NIU Goober, the ever-trying, sometimes succeeding, for backing our Kickstarter.
Yes. Star Citizen, that sort of like epic scale, half persistent world MMO type thing, half single-player game, raised over $6 million.
Wow.
Not all of it was Kickstarter. They had like two and a quarter on Kickstarter and other stuff, which I think might be all the money they needed. They wanted to raise $2 million in total from backers, and then they were going to go to a publisher. But I think they might have gotten all the money that they needed just from this. So they might be done getting revenue.
I saw kind of a cool video today that they published on Polygon, which was... It was just a video that they made where it transitioned from a piece of concept art to a space that you could walk around in.
Huh.
You know, it was neat.
That is cool.
Space.
The Hero University Kickstarter, by the time you hear this, it will probably be over. As of right now, they have 18 hours and maybe 40 grand left to go, 30 grand.
Hmm.
So they're getting close. You know, like a week and a half ago, they were $150,000 out. So they're getting up in there, but I don't know if it's going to be ready in time or if it's going to get.
I have a feeling that, again, how about I try Kickstarter Hero U as my Gmail password?
You're getting good at that. You could just have some sort of weird login credential system where whatever you're thinking at the time is your password.
Oh, man.
Wow, that would be rough.
Yeah.
Well, someone would have to guess what you're thinking in order to do it. So now, yeah, they've got about $32,000 left and 20 hours to go.
Man.
It's pretty rough.
I kind of hope it makes it. I like, even though I don't think it's going to be any good, I gave them some money because I want them to continue making video games for a living.
Yeah, I would like that too.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if they're gonna be able to pull it off. It's gonna be really close if it fails, though, which is gonna suck.
The Shadowgate one is getting pretty close too. I hope they make that. I hope they make that, and I hope it's successful so that they can do Deja Vu.
It's still just not. There's fucking nothing there. It is barely a game.
They are some of my favorite games from my childhood.
Well, that's because your taste was garbage and bullshit.
They were awesome on the Mac. I can't say anything about the NES versions.
Color just ruined it.
What, you said you had something to say about...
Oh, yeah, the Amnesia Fortnite thing. So, apparently Double Fine does this thing every year, which is pretty cool.
They take two weeks off.
Yeah, they take 2 weeks off. They pitch games. Tim Schafer picks two of them that, based on the pitches, puts that person in charge of a two-week span where they develop a prototype. And then if the prototype is promising, they make it into a real game.
That's where
Costume Quest came from. That's where Stacking. Iron Trenched, which became Iron Brigade, and something else that I'd never heard of. Monster in My Pants or something. Uh-huh. Once Upon a Monster. Once Upon a Monster in Mexico. So this year they have sort of opened it to the public.
Whoa.
They did it as a Humble Bundle. So it's pay what you want. Paying lets you vote for two of the pitched projects.
Wow.
And that's what determines which ones they make. And also you get copies of the prototypes.
Huh.
When they're done, whether it ends up becoming a real game. And you get the Costume Quest prototype and you get one of the other prototypes. I don't remember which one it is, just for buying in. It's interesting as both a fundraiser and a sort of participatory experience. The pitch, the video that I watched was sort of this high production value, pretty funny video where he's explaining it and there's a lot of props and cool shit going on.
He seems like a funny guy.
It's worth watching. Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
And then they showed, and I don't know if this was the entirety of the pitch videos, but it was just all of the people that worked at Double Fine, not all of them, but a bunch of them, just with a single sentence description of the game, and some of them are pretty funny.
Of their particular games?
Yeah, of their one that they're pitching. and I wanted to vote for more than two of them after.
Oh. That's
after,
rough.
Watching these videos. I don't know if the videos that you see later are more in-depth about it, but I don't know. It seems cool. It's interesting because it's, in a way, it's like, all right, well, we're raising money for charity the way that the Humble Bundle does, right?
It's also for themselves, right?
It is for themselves, yeah, and it's, you know, you distribute it the way
Literally with the Humble Bundle people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is humblebundle.com/doublefine or something.
What's the connection to Amnesia?
It's not. That's just what they call that. That's what they call that in-house thing is the Amnesia, okay. Because you forget whatever you're working on right now and then spend a fortnight making a prototype.
Gotcha.
That's really cool.
So, yeah, I think it could be cool.
Do you have to make your own prototype or is it... It's the pitches are like the first day.
The pitch is what determines who gets put in charge of a team.
For 2 weeks.
Yeah.
To then make a prototype.
Yeah.
See. Okay. So it's
both like seeing whether you have the chops to lead a team on a design and maybe producing something that you can sell. Like, it seems like a really cool way to do it
but it doesn't necessarily lead anywhere.
Yeah.
Because, like, Stacking and Custom Quest both came out the same time. Like, that must have been...
They were...
Basically the same time.
I don't think that that's true. I think that they were like a year apart.
I don't think they were that far apart. I thought they literally divided up Double Fine into two halves to finish them and came out roughly at the same time.
Well, I don't know. I wasn't paying a lot of attention. I never did finish Costume Quest. I got I got to the beginning of the mall and then just sort of quit and never went back to it. It's pretty good, though. Is that all the news?
That is all the news I have.
You got any news, Riff?
Nope.
News.
News.
So this assignment, Loom, the Loom. Brian Moriarty Tour de Force. Riff did not play it, claiming that because he has played it in the past, he is qualified.
Played it like twice in the past.
To discuss it. All right. And in order to test this, Riff, I've prepared some trivia questions for you.
Oh, okay. Oh, dear.
Question number one. What is the real first name of Blacksmiths Guild contact Rusty Nailbender?
Oh, damn.
That's rough.
That is rough. If you had asked me what his last name was, I could have told you Nailbender.
To be fair, it was actually not in the version that I played.
Correct. Well, but Kevin and I both knew it.
I did look at that site that you emailed.
But you didn't memorize it?
I did not memorize Rusty's real first name, I'm afraid.
All right, well, time's up. His first name is Wellrot.
Oh, good.
Question number two. What is the last name of Shepherd's Guild contact Fleece?
I noticed that because I thought it was kind of hilarious.
It is a pretty funny last name.
It was like, I don't know, Iron Thighs or something along those lines.
Close enough. Firm Flanks.
That was it, yes.
What is the full name of the organization of clerics of which Bishop Mandible is a representative?
I played the whole thing through and I couldn't actually catch the whole thing.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you that.
He only said it like twice, so...
It is the anti-secular conclave of clerics.
Okay. I was wondering if that was like a funny acronym or something, yeah. But it totally isn't.
What do you reckon Brian Moriarty's stance on organized religion is? I can't quite tell based on the plot of this game. Fourth question, Riff. Who is the awesomest Kickstarter backer?
Oh, well, it's Mr. Lieutenant Time Bonkers.
You sure it's not George the Bastard?
Well, okay. One of them, sure.
What about Mike Conant?
Sparemeister is a pretty good Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's true.
So is Shop Troll. You know what makes me sad, though, is that Kickstarter supporter XX Armageddon XX had to have this name because Armageddon 420 was already taken. man. Fucking Loom, man.
Good game.
Hells of good
I remember being game. Pretty shocked when Mandible blows up.
Yep. I remember seeing that for the first time and thinking, yeah. Yep. What I learned today from reading Wikipedia is about the various versions of this game. There was a bunch of stuff that I remembered from my earlier playthroughs that I did not experience on this playthrough. And it is because I played it on the floppy disk version, which had significantly more content in it than the CD-ROM version. Because given that this game predates MP3s, it was just Redbook audio. So it was just flat CD audio. So they could only have... Like, even if there had been no game, there could only be 80 minutes of audio, and the game was fully voiced, so they had to cut out a shitload of dialogue and cutscenes to make it fit on a CD. Huh.
That seems backward. I mean, why wouldn't they just... Man, I don't know.
There was no audio compression at that point.
Well, I mean, like, why not...
Put it on... Two CDs.
Why not relax the restriction that it's going to be fully voiced? I mean, if you can only have so much voice, why not pick and choose a little more rather than just excising it?
You don't think it would be weird if it was partially voiced? I think that would be weird.
Subtitles are a thing that you don't necessarily even have to turn on, right? Mm. Like, it's not like the text is just always there. Some of it is voiced and some of it isn't. I mean, there are definitely games that are partially voiced, and it doesn't seem that jarring,
like
but they're
in the cutscenes, but not in the conversations.
The whole game is basically cutscenes, right? Like, yeah, there's you wander around, you solve a little puzzle, and then there's a cutscene. You wander somewhere to solve a puzzle. So the only sort of complaints that I had about the game were that a couple of places I forgot what, because I hadn't played it in so long, I forgot what the solution to the puzzle was, and would try a couple of spells, nothing sort of seemed to work, and then you have kind of a far area that you can wander in, and there are, you know, you've got your sort of actions, which are the spells that you can cast, the drafts, and a bunch of objects scattered around, but in order to actually do anything, you have to go to them. And like, there's the distance, you move really slow,
and the areas are really big. So yeah, if you don't know where you're going, I mean, there were a couple times where I'm like, ah, fuck, I forgot that I had to go learn invisibility from the shepherds before I could get past the scythe guys. So I was like, fuck, I guess I will walk all the way back across there. You know, it's pretty.
And then, like,
man, that green glass city is freaking awesome.
Yeah, the art design is super great. I couldn't remember how to get past the front gate of the forge, and
I had to walk all the way back to the cave because I remembered what I had to do, but I'm like, wait, what's that thing that makes you look like somebody else? Oh, right, reflect.
Well, and so then I went back to the water. I had actually got that spell. I just hadn't used it, but then I was messing around. I went all the way back to that pool and then played with the empty spell, and there's like a scrying glow at the bottom of the pool. Like, but you could totally have missed that, and it doesn't, it's not important. You can skip it and it doesn't lose anything. And that's one of the things that I did like about the game was just all the different stuff in the environment that you can mess around with and cast spells on. Yeah. And like,
which is like, really important if you've got that kind of magic system. If what you've got is verbs, then you need to be able to use all your verbs on every noun.
Yeah, like I remember one of the very first things I did was try to cast open on a grave, and it like causes the whole world to shake. And in every graveyard, it does that because it's like, which is like sort of foreshadowing for the later stuff, which I didn't really, I had also forgotten. Like so much of the plot, I had sort of just spaced in the intervening years.
So some of it made me wonder, like, were you supposed to have to open that clam to get to the end of the dock, right? Or was that just there as an Easter egg? Something that I read in that Wikipedia article is that one of the differences between the disc version and the CD-ROM version is that some of the stuff that they excised was alternate solutions to puzzles.
Oh, wow.
And I never saw any mention of that anywhere else. And there's nothing about it that I remember being different. But I don't think that I've ever played that FM Towns version of it, which is
the one
thought
the Japanese computer.
Well, but which is thought, is considered by fans, according to Wikipedia, to be the
canonical,
the comprehensive one, right? Because it has the most stuff of all of the stuff. But I did miss all the cutscenes. There was stuff. I'm like, wait a minute. I thought I remembered the swans carrying that thing at the end past a bunch of other scenes in the game.
That totally happened.
What happens if you try to close the doors to the graveyards without going in and
I don't know
fixing people? I didn't try it, and I should have.
I probably have
a save game in there. It's weird. There were supposed to be sequels, right?
Yeah.
And Brian Moriarty said on two different occasions once that there was never any plan for there to be sequels, but they did toss around the idea, and one was that it was conceived as a sequel. Like, it kind of ends... Like, it kind of doesn't end, right? Like,
it's a cliffhanger.
Yeah, but I mean, you don't end something with a cliffhanger if you don't plan to move forward with it.
Sure,
and it just seems like they didn't make sequels to it because nobody wanted to. Like, nobody was interested in making sequels to it. But it was supposed to be Forge and Fold, where you were Rusty and Fleece, respectively. Like, where with Rusty, you are like, your quest is to take back the
Forge.
Take back the Forge, yeah.
And then it lands in the middle of the Shepherd's Pasture when you finally get it back.
Yeah, and then with Fleece, you're trying to like gather everybody together, which is thematically cool, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to gather everybody together to defeat Chaos at the end. Also, between the disc version and the CD-ROM version, they changed Chaos's gender.
Yeah,
they were speaking. They were talking about Chaos as a she, and I was like, "Wait, that doesn't look like a she." And
it's sort of androgynous.
The voice is kind of shrieky and could be either, but I guess they must have just decided it was the same voice as Fleece. So they must have just decided, like, "Oh well, this sounds better with a female voice. I guess we'll just refer to Chaos as a she now," which was just
a little
interesting,
odd.
Interesting choice.
Yeah.
Man, I like how this question. This game answers the question of what happens to us when we die. We turn into swans and swim around a space pond. Also, only 8 people have ever died.
You know, the game was pretty short, and I was like, I am pretty happy about that. I don't know that there is a market for this, but I would totally pay like $10 to play a game that would last 4 hours or whatever,
Yeah, even playing through this as a kid, it didn't take that long.
Yeah.
It was, I think, maybe 2 sustained play sessions to get through it. And I did not feel in the slightest ripped off I mean, because my parents had paid for the game. But also, it came with that that audio drama. It came with a cassette with half hour of audio content, where it explains some of the backstory.
But this speaks in sort of contrast to the people that are upset with, you know, a game if it doesn't provide them 80 or 100 hours of gameplay, you know, and...
I think that those people only exist on the internet and as such can be safely ignored.
Because nothing real happens on the internet.
Yeah. I mean, until games start getting bad review scores because they are as short as the content makes it so they need to be, and then fewer people buy them, or the developers don't get their bonuses and so the studio folds. That doesn't make any sense.
A lot of people said the same sort of thing about Portal and Portal 2, about how much preferable it is to have a short but well thought out and well crafted and self-contained.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Right-thinking critics are going to say that. Yeah. Reviewers and the public are just going to be like, meh.
I think it's a question of the public. Are you somebody that buys one game and plays it for a year? Then you're going to be kind of pissed if it's a four-hour game, if that's the game that you've decided you're going to play, right? Or are you somebody who wants to play 30 or 40 different games a month?
Right. You know?
So, yeah, I think that might be where the division lies.
The story is whatever. It kind of doesn't end, right? The story of the actual stuff that happens in the game is you know, I mean, it's pretty standard stuff. You know, you go through a bunch of logical gates by learning spells in cool ways. It's neat how those things are thematically tied in. Like, you have to line up a bunch of owls to learn the spell for being able to see in the dark like an owl, and the going to sleep spell you learn by having sheep jump over a fence, and like, that's cute. It's the puzzles.
Is it odd to you that there are always groups of four? Everything in the world is in groups of four.
No, that's just how it works, you know. Brian, you know, we like threes. Brian Moriarty likes fours.
Sure.
You know, like, because of his game Quadrinity. I read there was apparently in Space Quest 4, there was a game called Boom that you could read the box a copy of, and it says, "The latest bomb from master storyteller Mori Brianarty. Boom is a post-Holocaust adventure set in post-Holocaust America after the Holocaust. Neutron bombs have eradicated all life, leaving only you to wander through the wreckage. No other characters, no conflict, no puzzles, no chance of dying, and no interface. Make this the easiest to finish game yet. Just boot it up and watch it explode." Which is pretty scathing, you know. You compare it to a Space Quest, which I loved, but never fucking finished. When I was a kid.
You never finished the first one?
I think I eventually did finish it after talking to some dudes about how to finish it who had bought the hint book.
Oh, okay.
What got me stuck for the years that I was stuck on Space Quest 1 was not figuring out that you could take broken glass from the windshield of the ship when you landed on Corona. Yeah. So I got almost nowhere in it without some significant
which you
help.
Had to do from a specific angle, as I recall.
You couldn't do it when you were inside. Like, it was mentioned in the description from the inside. Yeah, I don't... Yeah.
Super frustrating.
So, Loom... If you think about Loom as... Imagine presenting that game as a text adventure. Mm-hmm. It is about the same level of complexity as a typical Infocom text adventure. I'm arguing that it is more complex gameplay wise than it's given credit for, given that Brian Moriarty before this had just made a bunch of text adventures. Mm-hmm. Right. This is a design of about that scope, right? And that in its day was a whole game, that text adventure. But I think because the graphical presentation necessarily drew your attention to the things that you could interact with meaningfully rather than all of the things that would have been described if it was a text adventure, it was a lot easier to figure out what was going on. Like, if this had been done as a text adventure, it would have been as hard as Enchanter.
Also, LucasArts games had the you never die or be
although this
stuck
was,
restriction.
This was the game that established that, right? This was the first... Because you could die... You could kill your dudes in Maniac Mansion.
Okay, yeah.
Right? It was, like, less so. But I'm also pretty sure you could get Zach McCracken into an unwinnable state.
You could definitely die in Indiana Jones and Last Crusade. Mm. I mean, you would just come back right away or whatever, but...
I didn't realize Loom was so early in the...
It was 90.
Okay.
So it was... I don't remember... It was pretty early, right?
I think so.
The other ones, I think Maniac Mansion might have been, like, 89. maybe. I don't know. Yeah, man. It's pretty good. Pretty good game. When I woke up this morning, I went down into my kitchen, and there were a bunch of ducks in the swimming pool. And I was like, oh. I'm serious. Like,
oh, some real ducks.
Yeah, there were ducks. Because apparently this is the time of year that ducks are
migrating,
and so they'll occasionally hang out in people's swimming pools as they they pass by. I was like, that was sort of a neat way to start my
swans.
Day.
Yeah. Did you decide to turn the pool into purple glass?
I like how every guild in the game is like, boy, I sure don't trust these clerics. We probably shouldn't give them this stuff that we're about to give them.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Okay, look at that guy, and his name is Mandible.
Yeah.
Like, that is not a good guy's name.
It's a pretty good villain name.
You know, really, the responsible thing for you to do would have been to just let the dragon eat those fucking sheep. Like, you don't need 1,000 sheep. You just told us, this is way more sheep than we normally have. Like, what do you care if they get killed? Like, you're screwing this up. And, you know, like, I mean, I'm sure that the... Okay, well, here's the thing. The gold that you would have gotten for making all these swords for Bishop Mandible, I totally left some in the cell that I turned Rusty's bed into. So there you go. I got more. You got a field that isn't growing any grain, because that'll be some gold if you want. Don't give this guy weapons to serve his army of the undead. Also, why do they need to eat? Or is the idea that they come back to life?
No idea.
Right, because... Because you bring...
It's like he had this idea of what was going to happen, and then like nothing even vaguely close to
you
that
can,
happened.
You bring Rusty back.
Yeah.
Because there is the hole. You fix his body, and he comes back to life because of the hole to outside the pattern. Right? But what does that mean for the... because the only people you see from outside the pattern are ghosts, and they can't hold a sword, and they sure as fuck don't need a mutton.
Why are weavers like sort of horrors from beyond this dimension?
Yeah, how do they fuck? If they like, do they have to fuck with their clothes on? Because the only person you know to have ever been born was born because this woman slipped a gray thread into the loom and a baby emerged from it that was not part of the overall pattern. Like, is that because they just can't ever take their clothes off and so they never fuck? And so they can never have kids the normal way?
But maybe they live forever.
Why do they have a graveyard?
Why are they old, too?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I mean, they didn't... So the grave was a fake, right? Your mom's grave is fake. But there's those other graves. Can you read the other graves? Because I like the little bits of flavor that you get from some of them, but it seems like they kind of ran out of steam. Or maybe they just ran out of space.
There's one plaque in the forge... In the blacksmith's guild, there's two in the glass.
There's two in the
guild.
But the one in the... You don't actually read the grave in the forge one. It's just like, oh, this is a grave. It's made out of bronze.
Right.
Right? It's not like a person's epitaph. But yeah, it's... The whole... That gray thread thing you learn from the audio drama.
Oh.
Like, okay. That's... You learn that your origin was not so much Immaculate Conception as you were...
A thread?
Like... I forget what Cigna's agenda was. She was like, we should stop. Because, like, the weavers got so good at working with cloth that they started being able to weave destiny. Hmm. Right? Is the idea. And it is also hypothesized that this takes place in Earth's far, far post-Holocaust future. Because it's, like, the year 8000.
Yeah.
Which, apparently, we lost civilization, but not the Gregorian calendar. Is it the Gregorian calendar that we use?
Julian.
Is it the I thought the Julian was what they had before.
Yeah, okay, so Gregorian is like the modification, sure. Who knows?
Yeah, so, I mean...
We probably modified it.
So, you know who knows? Somebody that actually did their research. But, Cigna wanted them to maybe stop fucking with people's shit. And they were like, no. So Cigna was like, well, fuck you. I'm going to put some gray thread in the loom. And then it turns into a baby. And apparently the baby's destiny is to just fuck everything. Like, all right, everybody, you're fucked. I'm a swan. Peace out. No sequel. Good ending. Good job, guys. I like that they made him Maury Brian Artie, like that time-tested parody version of thing by making the first word of it a version of the last word and vice versa. Yeah, that's good satire.
Trinity was a good game.
It was so fucking hard, though. It was almost Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy level hard.
I got to the last place. I got to Los Alamos, but I never managed to solve it past that without hints.
I think I got to the part where you're in the bubble and couldn't figure out how to do that. Yeah,
it's been a long time.
You know, and then Wishbringer was like his text adventure for babies, so it's only really hard and not impossible. But it's got the like get out of puzzle free card in the wish thing, which is neat. Oh man, Loom. I said for many, many years that Loom was my favorite video game. For a period of time, was supplanted by Ocarina of Time. Now I don't know. Now I don't know. If I could only play one of those games on my desert island, I'd probably pick Ocarina of Time just because it would keep me entertained for longer.
Yeah.
And I still have the memory of Loom.
Not some sort of video game about how to survive on a desert island.
Those are never very realistic. Like, you just take the wiki. You take the Minecraft wiki on a CD-ROM. All right, so we're going to continue in the LucasArts adventure vein for next week's assignment and do Full Throttle.
Yes, it's going to be a little trickier. It does not
appear to be for sale anywhere.
Yeah, so you might need to find an abandonware copy and run it in Scum VM.
Or you might need to go to... For a while, you could just find 100 of the discs laying around in thrift stores because that game got packaged with a lot of video cards.
Yeah.
Sort of the same reason that you can always find a copy of Deus Ex and you can always find a copy of Mega Race, because that was a game that came with every Packard Bell computer for a while. Not very good. Spoiler alert, Mega Race fucking sucks.
But Deus Ex was great.
Deus Ex was good, yeah. What, an MDK was in that? Like, these are all things that were packaged with video cards while I was still working in the computer shop.
There are some weird games that have been packaged with Max too. It's like Time Dinosaur or something. I forget which one that one was, and then like the sequel came out
Bugdom.
Yeah,
this one.
Anyway,
chess, I think.
Minesweeper. It's like somebody crying about ore. So figure it out. Find Full Throttle somewhere.
Yeah, and we'll try to make a forum thread for this week.
This is good. Yeah, sorry. Because Kevin's about to leave for Chicago again, we were on kind of a time crunch, and we wanted to do an episode
doing the next show? Is it going to be Wednesday? Or
No, not this Wednesday. Probably a week from this Wednesday.
Because this Wednesday, this is Thanksgiving week.
So this is going to be rough, because I have never played Full Throttle, and I'm going to try to do it without spoilers, and I have no idea how...
I mean, that's...
I have no idea how hard it is.
There was a time in the world where you couldn't get it, so it's got to be solvable.
Buddies.
Yeah, well, you still have buddies. Give us a call.
Yeah, but your buddies are... When your buddy is the internet, it's not like, your buddy knows everything. I've got this buddy that knows literally everything, and man, does he have a lot of porn. Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us a lot of porn...
Well, they should make sure it's of legal age.
Fine, if you want it to be boring.
And you could send it via Twitter at VGHotDog. Or you could send it via email, VGHotDog@gmail.com. Or you could send it via website, videogameshotdog.com, which has a link to our forums and other resources. So that's it.
Hey, speaking of hot.gogcock.hotdognet.hotdognet.hotdognet.com, there is a new member of the Hot Dog family of podcasts. Yeah. If you guys are interested in horror movies and want to hear some dudes talk about some horror movies, you can hear Josh, who you might know from the Monday Kingdom of Loathing podcast that I do. Matt, who you might know from the Apropos of Nothing podcast, or from Vilification Tennis, or from some Renaissance Festival bullshit.
Family Hot Dog.
For Family Hot Dog. There is Adam, who you might know from... I'm pretty sure he was the guy in charge of making the robot testicles in Transformers 3 extra racist. I think that was his role in the movie Transformers 3. But yeah, he wanted them to demonstrate that they were actually going to do a number of weekly episodes before they committed it to being part of the network. So there are 13 of them. So if you want a backlog of horror movie podcasts where they talk about horror movies, and I think that they assign themselves three horror movies a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Which I don't. That seems crazy unsustainable.
Well, I mean, if there are millions of horror movies.
Millions. I don't think so, buddy.
Yep. Millionsofhorrormovies.com.
So what's
that's where you find them all.
Yep. What's it called? Is it Horror Hot
it's
Dog?
It's Horror Show Hot Dog.
Okay.
Available online at horrorshowhotdog.com or from the link where there's like a Frankenweenie at hotdognet.com.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to do Frankenweenie. I wonder if Frankenweenie would have been a perfect first movie.
You know, the actual URL of hotdognet.com is thankyou.mustachiofurioso. For supporting the Kickstarter.hotdognet.com. And yeah, this has been an episode of Video Games Hot Dog starring me, Zach.
And me, Riff.
And me, Kevin.
Bye, everybody.
Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.